DW Africa Link. Can democracies across Africa survive the test of time? A recent Democracy Index report has revealed a pressing issue: how democratic institutions across Africa are being undermined by powerful interests. The report by the Ghana Center for Democratic Development, CDD Ghana, with support from the Open Society Foundation, found high levels of democracy capture across Africa. So, how did we get here? What does this mean for the future of democracy across Africa? And what's the solution? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
All right, so let's break this down. Democracy capture is when powerful or influential individuals or groups take control of democratic institutions and processes to serve their own interests, not the public good. This includes manipulating elections, weakening checks and balances, and diverting public resources for private gain. And according to a recent report, that is on the increase across Africa. To find out why and how to tackle the problem, let's bring in Dr. John Osaikwapong, Democracy and Development Fellow at the Ghana Center for Democratic Development, CDD Ghana. I also have Lewis Matthew, a researcher focusing on democratization, authoritarianism, and youth protest mobilizations in West Africa and the Sahel. Hello and welcome to Africa Link, both of you. Dr. John Osaikwapong, you get to go first. Democracy capture across Africa. How is it manifesting itself on the continent?
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here. So if you look at how it manifests itself on the continent based upon the various dimensions that we looked at in our study, you would see that there are a number of key, what we call perpetrators, right? Those who actually are actively involved in trying to capture democracy. What they do is they target particular institutions. So whether it is policymaking institutions, whether it is enforcement institutions, whether it's institutions of accountability, right? So your horizontal institutions like the legislature, the auditor general, or even sometimes your vertical accountability institutions like the media, civil society organizations, think tanks. And what they do is they use different methods and tools as they try to get these institutions or agencies to take decisions, not for the broader interest of the general society, but to serve their own narrow interest. So in certain places, you see that they may use political pressure, they may use the threat of removal from office. So it's either they are doing it to achieve material gain, or they are doing it to increase partisan control within their democratic polity. The other thing that we also saw in terms of its manifestation is that the chief executive officer, you know, and in our case, either the president or the prime minister, across the 10 countries that we examine, tends to be the key institution in the democratic design, actively involved in democracy capture. But there were two exceptions. So for in the case of Ghana, for example, it is actually the political party that is the main perpetrator, although other kinds of actors have their footprints across the democracy capture landscape. But right, in a nutshell, that is how it manifests itself across the continent, looking at the 10 countries that we examined.
Okay, so it's good that you're highlighting this because you were part of the research. And the key thing that I found interesting is you're saying that democracy capture across Africa is on the rise. What did you find gave that sort of conducive environment for the rise of democracy capture?
I think it's a reflection of all the different tools that those who are pursuing democracy capture actually deploy. Because when you start looking at the differences across countries, the differences across institutions, you would notice that they are not using one single tool and one single approach. And so because it is both fluid but also multifaceted in nature, it becomes initially challenging to to unpack or identify all the different fault lines so you can either push back and resist. So that becomes that context that sort of fuels why we see quite a high level of capture on different levels. I mean, there were four categories that we looked at whenever we asked our country assessors, to look at different institutions, whether, the proportion of decisions that were not subject to any capture at all, or different levels of captures, some actions, most actions, regularly took actions on behalf of the perpetrator. And when you look at those three different levels of active capture and you combine them, you see that at least 60% of the agencies that we examine, are subject to some level of capture. And I think it is some of those drivers, which our research then is, I think the thing our research is trying to do then is, if you are able to unpack all the intricate ways in which it manifests itself, then you can either reduce the incidence of active attempts at capture and hopefully over the long term be able to either eliminate it, right, or at least reduce it to the barest minimum.
What I still really want to get to, though, so we clearly understand what's going on, is for anything to happen, there has to be some sort of system in place or some conducive environment that makes it possible. Because for me, if you say something is on the rise, what has led to it being on the rise, right? Is it because overall the systems are just not strong enough, and so anyone can take advantage of the systems and abuse it for, to benefit just themselves? Or what really is creating that scene for the rise of democracy capture across the countries that you did the research in? And in your answer, please highlight some of these key countries that you did the research on also.
The study didn't look at the why, right? The initial approach was, just to capture, where it is occurring, at what levels is it occurring, who is behind it, and what motivates them. So that is at the core of what the study did.
I like the way you've sort of broken it down now. Then share with us that, in summary, that sort of key information that you got from the exact things that you looked at.
For example, if, in terms of, who is behind capture, as I previously mentioned, your main perpetrator is the chief executive, the president or the prime minister in the case of certain countries. And the countries we looked at, Ghana, Mozambique, Senegal, Nigeria, Democratic Republic of Congo, Benin, South Africa, Botswana, Kenya. Kenya was one of them.
Right.
So again, you can see the active involvement of the executive behind democracy capture. Why or what motivates them, as I mentioned, partisan control, material gain. But then when you look at particular institutions that they try to capture, for example, so if you look at enforcement institutions, one of the mechanisms and motivations is to cover up illegality. If you look at your regulatory or policy-making institutions that we looked at, part of that goal, again, is, for material gain. So if you can see, or even in the tender process, for example, material gain is one of the motivations. So when you begin to unpack them, those are some of the variations that you see. But back to your other question in terms of, is there something in the environment that enables it? I think one of the things that is often discussed within the African is the weak nature of our institutions. In the famous words of former President Obama, Africa needs strong institutions and not strong persons. And I think it is some of those vulnerabilities that these perpetrators are able to identify within these democratic institutions that I believe then drives some of their efforts to take advantage of it and bend it to their will.
Let me come to you, Lewis Matthew. You know, you've heard John speak. He was part of the research that claims that democracy capture across Africa is increasing. You yourself have been doing a lot of research when it comes to democratization, authoritarianism, and all of that. What do you make of the findings overall?
Thank you so much for having me, and hello to Doc. Thank you so much for being here. I think it's a timely and rigorous contribution to the study of democratic governance in Africa. We've had a lot of research, a lot of data, but this is really contemporary and also timely because it moves beyond what is existing to actually providing empirically grounded methodological transparent tools for assessing the extent and mechanisms of democracy capture across a diverse range of countries and institutions, like he has mentioned, across both the Anglophone countries and the Francophone countries as well. I think that DEMCAM index is really interesting because it actually goes beyond the surface level indicators that we have. I don't want to mention the names of other, you know, databases that are doing great work, but I think their indicators or generic measures of corruption focus instead of on specific institutions, like he has mentioned, regulatory bodies, judiciary, policymaking agencies, as well as addressing both vertical and horizontal accountability organizations, which are, as he said, systematically targeted for capture.
What does the increase of democracy capture lead to?
It has led to the erosion of trust, basically, and the crisis of representation across African democracies, because if you have institutions that are supposed or, publicly known to be independent, to be nonpartisan, to be, you know, democratic, and you have that same institutions undermining, you know, the rights and the interest and the well-being of the people, there's sort of, you know, a problem there, because people become, apathetic towards the political system, people become disillusioned, people become, you know, angry even to go to the street, like we have seen in recent cases of urban youth protests and all of that. So I think it's timely because, you know, it's addressing slow but very pernicious practices that undermines trust in institutions and also political representation.
Right. And then what happens when trust is totally broken down in society?
I mean, people resort to other things. For instance, my lead research in Burkina Faso, we see a lot of people going around a dictator, a military person or a strongman rule or something. So people kind of find other channels of pushing their demands to the political arena, basically. And you wouldn't blame them, because the very tools that are supposed to protect and ensure their rights are the very tools that have been undermined by state gradually and eroding their civil rights and liberties, and also political and economic goods that are supposed to come to them. So they resort to other things that undermine the strength, the capacity, the sovereignty, and also the security of the political arenas.
Right. Here's what I find interesting is that, as John said, him quoting also former President Obama, that African countries do not need strong leaders. They need strong institutions. Then again, it's strong people that make the strong institutions, right? I mean, institutions are run by people. Luckily, it's not AI yet. So the question then is, what does it say then of the institutions and the people running these institutions if somehow they just allow, again, as John said, the top guy, whether it's the prime minister or the president, to just basically violate the law for their own interest?
I mean, institutions are frameworks. They are tools. They're supposed to guarantee certain compliance from the actors that are in charge of them. If you have institutions, you have people that work in those institutions. And so there's some sort of trust that comes with, you know, delegating power, the people's power and interest to some particular set of actors elected democratically to uphold this trust or to keep this trust. So if you have institutions on paper or on constitutional framework or whatever, and in actual practice or like empirical observations, they don't seem to work, then there's a problem. And it just seems like the institutions are just window dressing that claims to have some sort of democratic structure, but actually devoid of the functioning and of the content of, you know, of democracy in practice. So, I mean, that's why a lot of people would actually think that, you know, Africa is democratic in just words and in just for global recognition of the fact that they are democratic and hence they ought to be sovereign and to be left to decide how they carry out their affairs. But, you know, a lot of underground oppression shows that these are just like very window dressing institutions that are void of the actual functioning that is supposed to be the outcome of them.
But let me move to you, John, because when we talk about democracy capture, it's very easy for people to say, oh, well, that is an Africa thing. And, you know, as usual, democracy is failing. How does the situation across Africa, I mean, you did 10 countries, as you've mentioned to us, compares to the rest of the world? And also, there are those that say, well, when you talk about democracy on paper, Africa is still relatively new to it. Is it something that we can say that these are just some of the challenges that come along with strengthening democracy? Or is there more to it?
Good question. I believe that democracy and efforts that countries make to build and sustain democracies is not a one-time event. It's a process. I believe that we would go through periods of highs, we would go through periods of lows, but you just hope that over the medium to the long term, a country's democracy would get to a point of quote-unquote peaceful settlement, where your institutions get into a regular habit of serving the interests and addressing the needs of the general, of the citizens, where they are able to, you know, push back against particular narrow interest that tries to undermine the work that they do. So I think it's typical of nation building, democracy building, institutional building to go through such challenging periods. So for me then, democracy capture, at least I'm hoping, does not become a permanent feature of our democracies, but rather, if this is what we are observing now, that it is one of those challenges that our democracies are facing that makes it imperative for us to build buffers of resilience, to be able to push back, you know, against it and ensure that its long-term corrosive effects does not ultimately destroy our democratic institutions. So we don't make a comparison between the countries that we looked at and the rest of the world. But even if you look at some of the emerging, you know, other kinds of research, you would see that at least the last 5 years, there's a lot of, I mean, you know, I call it democracy's difficult days, right? That for a long time, democracy enjoyed a sense of moral superiority and legitimacy over other kinds of political arrangements. And you never got a lot of active conversations questioning what is happening with democracy, why it is working the way it is working, why it is not delivering, et cetera, et cetera. But in the last 5 years, there's a lot of conversations around democratic backsliding, growing dissatisfaction with democracy, democracy capture, democratic resilience, democratic erosion, all of those things. So I think we are at a place and a time where there is a renewed call to take a second look at this legitimate or this kind of government that has enjoyed legitimacy and moral superiority for a long time to right. make sure that it continues to do the things that has made it the preferred form of government in so many places.
Lewis, let's jump back to you. At the end of the day, I think you really laid down what all this could lead to. At the end of the day, democracy capture, whether it's a, you know, it's a dent in democracy or not, it's a challenge, right? That could impact how strong a country's democracy becomes. So what needs to be done now to prevent the further increase in democracy capture? Or are we at a point where it's really going to be difficult because it took a lot of time for us to even get where we are when it comes to democracy capture? What needs to be done now to tackle democracy capture across Africa?
Thank you so much for the question. I think one of the ways that we can begin to do something about it as individuals and also as, you know, as academias and also media, the media, is to actually tackle it from, you know, legal protections. So by legal protections, I mean that, you know, the rights of freedom of association, of expression and assembly should be upheld and should be guaranteed, not just by, you know, some local authorities, but also some very strong international engagement and commitment to democratic values. I know there are a lot of crackdowns on support of civil societies across a lot of illiberal democracies in Africa, especially, you know, cases like Uganda, Rwanda, and all of that. But I think there's a way that it can be done to ensure that the expression of association and expression of assembly of civic actors, such as the media, civil societies, you know, can operate without fear of harassment or retaliation from the system. One of the things that I think can be done now to tackle the issue that I mentioned earlier about civil society capture and all of that is actually resource independence. So by resource independence, I mean that there should be a way of diversifying the funds and streams of civil society organizations to ensure that vulnerability is managed to with regards to political or financial pressure. Of course, in this time and age and, you know, era, we've seen fake, some kind of deep fake civil society organizations, you know, fabricated by the state to project the powers and the influence and the interest of, you know, particular elite coalitions within the state. But I think that there are still authentic civil society organizations, you know, that are operational within certain countries. And right. so it is imperative that we begin to think outside of state resources to diversify funding streams that minimize such financial pressure, including support of, you know, some really passionate people that want the state or the government to work or that want democracy to flourish in Africa.
Very well noted. Looking at the arguments from both of you side, many thanks, Dr. John Osai Kwapong, Democracy and Development Fellow at the Ghana Center for Democratic Development, that's CDD Ghana. Also, Lewis Matthew, researcher focusing on democratization, authoritarianism, and youth protest mobilizations in West Africa and the Sahel. Learned a lot from you. Thank you. Now, democracy capture is a critical threat to Africa's democratic future. No doubt about that. Undermining institutions, eroding public trust, and limiting the benefits of democracy for ordinary people. Resisting capture helps prevent backsliding into authoritarianism or military rule, which has been a risk in several African countries in recent years. Talking about Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, for example. At the same time, it is only when democracy works for everyone, not just elites, that it can deliver health, education, and prosperity to ordinary citizens. So what do you think? Share your thoughts with us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Your voice matters in this fight against democracy capture. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Don't forget to click follow and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.